Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail. Here are your hosts, Trent Kling and Leighton Kling.
Welcome to another edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling. He's Leighton Kling. We'll talk about Target on this episode, as well as Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, their deal. And we'll have earnings from Kate Spade and Skechers. But first, on this Retail Focus Podcast brought to you by Path to Purchase Leadership University, we discussed GNCs. They reported their first quarter earnings on Tuesday of this week. Results were mixed, but overall, the company is still showing signs of struggle. This all after they rolled out the one new GNC concept in Layton. They closed stores. Listeners will remember they closed stores back on December 28th entirely to refurbish the stores, update the electronic systems, update some of their technology. And it still looks like this hasn't completely taken hold, but also it may be too early to judge.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting in that they opened the call with claiming that they are one new GNC. So they've really fundamentally transformed their business model, or that is what they want investors to glean from this call. Like you said, they updated some technology and they also re-merchandised some of their stores when they closed on December 28th of last year. They initiated their new GNC mobile app for Android and iOS and realigned prices across all sales platforms. And with that, you could see that they realigned prices in regards to what their brick and mortar stores were selling things at compared to the online stores. And then also they implemented an Amazon marketplace model that you can compare products a little bit easier with the items that are currently on Amazon and their other stores. But this included a relaunch of their membership rewards program, which we'll delve into a little bit more later. But they named it My GNC Rewards, and it's designed to be a little bit more transparent for their customer and better at targeting their consumer needs. With the new membership, they have an upscale Pro Access program. It is a $39.99 yearly membership fee, and it has online shopping that's free, free samples, exclusive deals, and yearly access to giveaways. The base membership, the MyGNC Reward membership, is still offering 1 point per every dollar spent and $5 off upon earning 150 points. Overall, though, with the membership, like I said, we'll be talking about it later, they cited high conversion rates between the old membership and the new membership. They are requiring customers to transfer that. It's not something that just happens automatically. We had talked about the Costco private label credit card with American Express transferring over to their new Visa credit card automatically and how much of a problem that was. This is going to be a little bit different in that it's a little more labor intensive. Overall, it does seem like the one bright spot for the company was e-commerce, despite sales having fallen during this previous quarter.
The company, as you mentioned, has also started selling through their own Amazon storefront. And Amazon, this is kind of ironic because they're one of the largest gobblers of market share in the supplements industry when you look at how GNC sales have shrunk over the past several years. And this is due in part to the fact that consumers can compare prices. GNC did mention during this call that they felt like Amazon sales were maybe stronger than expected, but still, as a whole, their e-commerce sales between the website and Amazon went down over prior quarters. And there are limitations to their Amazon storefront, which is something that they were pretty bullish on in this particular call. For example, if they have third-party supplements, they have deals where they cannot compete with a lot of supplement manufacturers to sell those on Amazon. An example of this would be the product NO Explode, which can be purchased at most GNCs throughout the country. It's manufactured by BSN Incorporated. BSN kind of has an exclusivity deal where they sell the product on their own on Amazon. So GNC, under their Amazon account, isn't allowed to sell the BSN products. So when you search NO Explode on Amazon, you get only BSN results. Nothing comes up for GNC. So in that regard, their Amazon presence may not be helping them a ton. And if they're looking for that to supplant some of their e-commerce sales, that's a dangerous game they're playing. their Amazon sellers profile really only includes their own private label products, which is something that they want to build out. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Pretty much everything on the GNC Amazon site is GNC branded, which is great for GNC, but it doesn't do much when it comes to competing against the manufacturers of these products as a whole. And in fact, when you compare these products on Amazon from these third-party sellers to the products on GNC's website, they usually compare favorably in terms of price, at least, to those that are listed on GNC's website. To keep with the NO Explode example, you can purchase that on Amazon for $28.95, whereas on GNC's own website, it's $36. Obviously, a pretty large price difference between the two, and if you're a consumer searching on Amazon and searching on GNC's website, you'll probably pick the former, especially given that both offer free shipping. And I think that's part of what's eating into their e-commerce sales. People are becoming increasingly aware that they can purchase these supplements online. So if something isn't GNC private branded that customers want, they're probably going to go elsewhere to get it. And this showed up in the first quarter results where, again, despite the changeover to the one new GNC, we're not really seeing effects from that just yet.
Yeah, GNC reported consolidated revenue of $644.8 million for this fiscal year, compared with consolidated revenue of $668.9 million for the first quarter of 2016. This represents a decrease of 3.5%, which is indicative of the company's struggles. Same-store sales decreased for the company overall by 3.9%. This includes both domestic and international markets. Domestic same-store sales decreased by an average of about 4.6%, and this is what a lot of analysts were pointing to, saying that their domestic market is their largest and really needs to be their focus going forward if the company is looking to survive and keep sustainable profits in the long term. They are including the online sales as part of this same-store sales metric. However, they're no longer counting individual sales from the memberships. I had said earlier that the Pro Access membership is around $40 annually. They are not counting this in terms of revenue for same-store sales. While top-line revenue decreased by about 3.5% year-over-year, net income dropped by over 50%, and that is a key measure for the company as they look to rebound from their pressures in 2016. The company reported net income of $23.9 million compared to $50.8 million in the prior year period. Diluted earnings per share came in at 35 cents for the first quarter compared with 69 cents for the prior year, so approximately the same percentage decrease. They spent $13.9 million in capital expenditures just in the first quarter, Trent, and I believe that has something greatly to do with their repositioning in the market. Despite weak numbers in revenue, profit, and same-store sales, management is hopeful that they are in the midst of a turnaround. However, in a statement by Bob Moran, again, interim CEO for the company, he says the new one GNC represents a fundamental change in our business model. And in the first quarter of 2017, we saw those transformational changes begin to bear fruit. The company cited transaction growth of 9.3%. However, we were looking, and this appears to be a sequential improvement. Actual transactions were down double digits. If you're looking at the transaction value, they were down about 12.1%. So even though they're bringing in more people to either their online storefront or their brick and mortar storefront, the overall purchase value is down significantly. Again, double digits there. Even though same-store sales were also negative, they cited sequential improvement there as well. We're seeing that same-store sales were actually worse in the fourth quarter of 2016. They now have 5 million rewards members, 5.4 million to be exact, and they will begin to use the member data later this year to showcase tailored offerings. And I think this is the one bright spot for the call, Trent. You were talking about their Amazon presence. I think that was a bright spot for management when they were talking on the conference call. But I think this is the second biggest thing, because here you have members that are very loyal to the company. We all know that frequency tends to go up if you have a high amount of people that are in your membership rewards program. We see it with Ulta Beauty all of the time, how they're able to get customers in the door a little more frequently and in turn able to draw in more money month over month. But that Pro Access program that we had talked about now has 100,000 members. And if you do the quick back of the napkin math, you can see that $40 per member per year already equates to $4 million per year that they brought in a very short amount of time.
I think the main concern for me when looking at this GNC conference call, in addition to the fact that as you were on the conference call, Leighton, you kind of noticed that the folks on the call from GNC seemed a bit unsure of themselves, and they're using some different cooking in terms of the numbers to try and make things seem better, the sequential improvement being one of them. They're coming off a fourth quarter that was just absolutely awful for the business. In fact, their fourth quarter saw a 49% drop in online sales versus the fourth quarter in the previous year. And they mentioned in this call that they expect to use member data from this rewards program, in which they have 5 million members, later this year. Why haven't they been using the data to this point? I think that reveals a good portion of why GNC is in the hole that they're in. You look at a company like Ulta Beauty, they began using their rewards program data almost instantly. Meanwhile, GNC has had these rewards programs going on, and yet they haven't been able to tap into the data to showcase these tailored offerings that they're mentioning. Overall, when you look at the online dynamics, this is one of the areas that we feel is really hurting GNC and may impact GNC in the long term. One part of the restructuring that took place was price alignment between brick and mortar and online sales. Some of the prices had to be lowered. Some of them had to be increased to make sure they worked well with the sales taking place in the brick and mortar realm. However, it seems as though they had to lower more prices than increase some prices to make sure that not only were the prices aligned between brick and mortar and online sales, but so that they could have what they call sharply priced items to try and bring customers in. But they're keeping healthy margins in more specialty products. However, Leighton, when you look at this industry overall, it seems like a lot of these products are now readily available through other avenues. GNC is no longer the only place to get something like whey protein and creatine.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk all the time about marketing and the marketing dynamics with a company like this. The last thing you want is to have your product commoditized. And when you're looking at their main products and some of their biggest categories, we're talking about whey protein and products such as creatine monohydrate. These are products that truly are commoditized, and there really wasn't much they could do about this. So when you're going on Amazon or another marketer online, such as supplementgiant.com, you see that these types of products are only getting cheaper and cheaper year after year. And so because of this, they did have to implement those sharply priced items, and they had to reduce the prices of these more common items at the GNC stores. They also said they're going to be cutting back the buy one, get one promotions. They feel they had to do this because of those price decreases with their other items. So overall, it does appear that this probably had an effect with their online sales. So even though they were citing decent traffic growth, they were saying that online sales decreased overall by 7.2%. And I would have to believe that it has a lot to do with the fact that prices are a little bit less compared to what they were last year. And so overall, you see a company here that is going through a lot of changes, but they also have another issue in regards to the Super Bowl ad rejection that had happened just 6 days before the Super Bowl had taken place. They were preparing a 30-second ad to take place during the Super Bowl. However, it got taken off because the NFL actually bans 162 of their supplements. And this is interesting because they were claiming during the Q&A session of the conference call that this significantly hurt their sales opportunities for the first quarter and leading into the second quarter. And I have to think that this really is an issue, but this is something they should have really looked into beforehand. Despite the poor showing during this earnings release, it will be important to see if at least some people recognize the more competitive model they're putting forth, at least with the pricing that you had mentioned, Trent. And traffic numbers will tell the story as we look forward to Q2, as well as the membership data. They were alluding to the fact that memberships have increased month over month. So I am curious to see if they're able to get that data up in terms of the members that are in the programs and how they're actually utilizing that data. Trent, as you had mentioned, they are looking to use that consumer data, emails and those types of things in order to successfully target their consumer base. As of March 31st, 2017, the company had 3,499 corporate stores in the U.S. and Canada and around 1,100 domestic franchise locations and 2,300 locations in Rite Aid franchise store within a store concepts and 1,949 international stores. So Overall, you can see that GNC has close to 9,000 locations worldwide. We should be looking to see if they can leverage that, at least in some sort of way that other retailers with a large brick-and-mortar presence have been able to utilize an omni-channel network.
We move on to retail giant Target now. A lot of news regarding this being the one-year anniversary of the AFA's boycott of Target, but that's not necessarily the angle we are taking this week. Instead, we're looking at Target's new partnership with online marketplace Accompany in an effort to expand its design portfolio and enhance its brand. Now, Target has long been known as a general merchandise retailer that's kind of on the forefront of style and fashion. It's one of the reasons why over the last couple of decades, they've cultivated a following that you don't very often see from general merchandise retailers. Instead of using their own network of suppliers here, they're looking to use the success of Accompany to offer authentic products to their customers. And I think this is a different plan, certainly, than what you would see out of Walmart, who has been acquiring a number of e-commerce retailers of late. This is a partnership between Target and Accompany, not a buyout. Target has reiterated the broader mission of bringing in rich global designs to their overall product portfolio. And according to a news release, they have flown a global design team to multiple nations in order to draw inspiration. But when we look at Accompany as a whole, you can see that Target may not have to fly too much further, as Accompany is a business that is similar, although not exactly like the likes of a retail store like 10,000 Villages, for example. Accompany actually curates a number of different designs and a number of different products from a bunch of different suppliers, over 130 different designers. It's all fair trade, artisan made apparel, accessories, and other items from around the world. And Accompany, unlike maybe Target, for example, has price points that are maybe slightly on the designer end, not a luxury retailer by any means, but your typical tops at Accompany are going to run anywhere between you have some blouses even as high as $350. Accompany has grown as an e-commerce retailer. They've driven more traffic to their website overall, and Target is looking to kind of hitch their wagons to Accompany in the e-commerce space, certainly, but also in the in-store space to try and filter some of their design mechanisms on into their own store.
AccompanyUS.com really has been on a tear lately, and with this partnership, you're going to be looking at increased sales for the company. It is privately held, but here recently, they've been featured in such magazines as Vogue, Esquire, Glamour, and InStyle, among others, and so really their popularity has gained. You're seeing that a lot of these materials that they're using, a lot of the efforts that they're making in terms of philanthropic efforts across the world are really getting positive PR, and I think this is going to be an excellent partnership for the two companies. It is interesting, Trent, you had mentioned there are 130 plus different designers. If you go on their website, you can click on each individual designer and you can see what they provide for the AccompanyUS.com platform and each of their products that they have a hand in. So it's a very interesting concept, something that is extremely transparent and something that a lot of people have been wanting lately. And if you go through the other items on their website, through their different categories, you can see where they're made as well. You're looking at countries in India, Kenya, and several Latin American areas that produce jewelry, handbags, and contemporary tops and bottoms. And if you look at Target's reasoning for this partnership, it is fairly clear to see why they want this partnership. Several factors have been highlighted, including their appreciation for how products will sustainably be sourced. Target seemingly has a strong appreciation for how a company has been built up over the years and has formed relationships with economically unstable areas of the world. And that really is what it's about, is business bringing people together. And I think they do see the true value of their mission, and they're trying to bring the two together in order to support not only their customers, but a broader mission.
I'm anxious to see if Target can somehow marry this broader mission that a company has with a price point that will work for most Target consumers. As we mentioned, the price point tends to be a little bit higher on many of the company's products. But when you look at the press release Target sends out, they included handbags, serving bowls, and earrings, not a lot of the traditional clothing items. So these are things that won't necessarily take a ton of space, especially earrings, to include in store if they want wanted to go that route. It's not necessarily clear how they're going to work with a company to try and source these products and distribute them. But Kelly Caruso, the president of Target Sourcing Services, did say that they want to remain connected to the smaller communities around the world, and also that they are going forward committed to fostering, and I quote, ongoing mutually beneficial relationships with our vendors and artisan partners, end quote. Target, again, PR move, but also a move that will work towards their target consumer, no pun intended, their consumer that comes in, expects a little bit higher end stuff from a general merchandise retailer, even though the price point may not necessarily be where customers expect it. Now, looking at the Target stock, shares have recently hit a five-year low as the company has seen same-store sales slumping, margins shrinking. And I think that's the bigger issue here. They're feeling some pricing pressure from some of the other larger chains. You talk about Walmart, you talk about Dollar General in this category. Target has to do something to, again, stand out on the fashion front, and working with a company like a company will certainly help to do that and bolster their brand going forward. Currently, Target's trading at around $54 per share. This time last year, the stock traded around $83 a share, loss of roughly $16 billion in market value. For some investment firms, they're really looking at Target as a stock that could see some growth. We've mentioned in earlier discussions about Target how recently their e-commerce platform has really taken off. They increased their e-commerce sales by nearly a third during their last quarter over the previous year's quarter. And that's a good sign going forward, as are their traffic numbers. During their last quarterly release, they did mention that traffic numbers were up, but overall basket size was down, a likely product of some of this pricing pressure that they're seeing. And as I mentioned on a television station in Charlotte earlier this week when I was interviewed about the possible implications of the boycott surrounding Target, I don't know that the boycott has as much of an implication on Target as the overall softness in some of the brick and mortar segments. Target's same-store sales going down by under 2% is not necessarily a warning sign in the fourth quarter. I think a lot of people scattered a little bit after they saw their fourth quarter sales, their holiday sales, but overall Target seems to be working to stay on top of things for their consumers. And honestly, if their traffic numbers continue to increase, you can see them potentially beating some of their same-store sales goals that the company has set. And right now, for at least the first quarter of fiscal year 2017, those same-store sales goals are in the negative.
Yes, Target may very well be undervalued. If you compare them to their larger competitor in Walmart, who has a price-to-earnings ratio of 17, Target's is just sitting around 11.9 right now, due to a lot of the factors that you mentioned. So I am curious to see if the stock rebounds throughout the latter half of 2017. Well, after regulatory hiccups, it appears that Bass Pro Shops' acquisition of Cabela's is on its way to being closed. One might think that regulators had an issue with the two companies being very similar and maybe a merger between the two being too much of an antitrust issue. However, that is not the case, as the issue stemmed from Cabela's credit card and banking division being divested to just one company. We'll explain. Originally, they were going to divest their financial services to simplify future operations between the two retailers. Again, Bass Pro Shops privately held, Cabela's publicly traded. Capital One had stated an interest to buy both the bank and private label credit card divisions. Capital One is an American bank holding company that specializes in credit cards, home loans, auto loans, and other different banking and savings products. You see their ads all the time, and they are a publicly traded company that really has had a strong past 2 or 3 years as they've been buying these portfolios up. However, regulators were not in favor of Capital One buying both financial pieces of Cabela's, and it's unclear why. There were no statements given, but the retailers were worried that the deal was not going to close, or at least take longer than expected due to this issue. Now it looks as though the deal will be saved thanks to Synovus Financial Corporation coming in and potentially buying their bank division.
Synovus is like the knight on the white horse riding into town to save the day for this potential acquisition. Synovus's divisions provide commercial and retail banking, investment, and mortgage services to customers. They have 29 locally branded divisions, 280 offices throughout the southeastern United States. So perhaps a little bit out of the wheelhouse of Cabela's, but right around the wheelhouse of Bass Pro Shops, which is based out of Springfield, Missouri. Particularly over the last couple of years, Synovus has had a strong go of things after having been one of the most affected banks during the economic downturn of 2008 and 2009 due to a high percentage of real estate holdings. But Synovus has come out of nowhere. They swoop in and they look to take on nearly $1.2 billion in Cabela's bank deposits. So it will be that the banking services are divested between these two individual companies. And this is important because, as Leighton mentioned, it looked as though regulators may not okay the deal because they had an issue with Capital One kind of taking over the entire thing. A little bit of background about this deal. As we discussed in October, Bass Pro offered to buy Cabela's for $4.2 billion with financial backing from Goldman Sachs. Leighton already talked about how Cabela's is publicly traded. Cabela's stock, this was a premium over its stock price. And in fact, after this was announced, the stock surged about 7%, now trading near $57 per share. We had mentioned the up and down financial past of Cabela's on a previous podcast. And honestly, Leighton, I know you and I even had some arch eyebrows about whether this merger would go through after Gander Mountain has recently announced some financial struggles, maybe paring down the outdoors superstore marketplace a bit further. But in this case, it looks like regulators see enough competition from smaller firms like Sportsman's Warehouse as one example and Academy Sports and Outdoors as another to provide just enough competition to give the thumbs up. At least that's the way it appears so far.
Yeah, and it appears as though they have at least scrutinized this deal a little bit. I think that is due to a lot of consolidation in this arena. We talk about a lot of shops going out of business this last year, especially with Sports Authority, and now with several bankruptcies looming. You're really looking at two companies that probably do need each other when you're looking at the amount of customers they have and the amount of leverage they can have on the market. We're talking about $3.6 billion in revenue last year for Cabela's. Bass Pro Shops could definitely use that in their portfolio. They aren't going to be buying them with cash, however. Goldman Sachs is going to be assisting in the financial backing of the deal. But it is interesting, Trent, you mentioned some very good points here. And it is curious to see why they would want to come together. You're looking at different parts of the country where they do business in, but there is some overlap. So I am curious to see if there's consolidation, if this deal does close. Again, $4.2 billion as Bass Pro Shops looks to buy Cabela's in this fiscal year.
Once again, we remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Path to Purchase Leadership University. Path to Purchase success relies on understanding shopper behavior, but finding time for training can be a challenge. That's why Path to Purchase Leadership University created a collection of online courses to enhance your knowledge on topics like shopper marketing, e-commerce, collaboration, and more. Path to Purchase Leadership University is the only end-to-end online and on-demand curriculum that builds shopper-centric knowledge and skills. So don't wait. Enroll today at p2pi.org/learn. That's p2pi.org/learn.
Path to Purchase success relies on understanding shoppers, their behaviors, and collective shopper experience. That's why Path to Purchase Leadership University has developed an industry-specific curriculum designed to make you an expert in your role. These online, on-demand courses cover shopper marketing, shopper behavior and engagement, e-commerce, collaboration, insights, and more.
You can also choose a more robust and challenging course of study to earn an industry designation that demonstrates your achievements and skill level to peers and competitors. Path to Purchase Leadership University is the only end-to-end, online, and on-demand training program that builds shopper-centric knowledge and skills. So once again, don't wait. Become more shopper-centric. Enroll today at p2pi.org/learn. That's p2pi.org/learn. We roll on to the second block of the Retail Focus podcast by moving into fashion and footwear. We begin with the fashion portion of things. Kate Spade and Company failed to excite investors on Tuesday after the company reported a dismal first quarter earnings report. This was back on Tuesday, April 18th. This caps off a year of rumors, earning misses, and profit declines from a once prominent luxury brand. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the things that have been going on over the last couple of months with Kate Spade and Company as Layton discusses the earnings numbers. But first, I wanted to provide some background on Kate Spade and Company. They're not a company that we've talked about yet on the podcast. They've operated two banners, Kate Spade New York and Jack Spade New York. They also divide their company into four category pillars: women's, men's, children's, and home. They didn't actually have a conference call for this earnings report, and in their earnings release, they did not divide their earnings up into these four pillars, so these are pretty much useless from an analytics perspective, but important to note, momentum is kind of reemerging in luxury home. They have an opportunity to take some market share from Restoration Hardware and Neiman Marcus, but momentum is waning in women's luxury and especially children's luxury, as children's luxury brands have reported significant softness of late. And you wonder if that's part of the reason why the company has issued some financials that are maybe not where analysts had expected. In just February, they announced researching strategic alternatives as the company has stagnated significantly over the last several years. The share price today is about $17.50. It's about the same as it was in February 2013, with a peak of nearly $40 in 2014. And Layton, as you and I both know, the word strategic alternatives often means looking for a buyer in retail company speak.
Yeah, and this is something we've heard from several companies here recently, one being Whole Foods, saying that they are open to strategic alternatives, and that is why their share price has been up lately, as they potentially look for someone to buy them. But for Kate Spade, you see a lot of issues, and particularly with their profitability. We look at same-store sales first, or what they call direct-to-consumer comps. They were down 2.4% over the first quarter of 2016, and these numbers include e-commerce sales. Many companies in this sector include e-commerce in this number, listed around 2%, which is a rounding down number in the headline of the press release. Net sales fell by 1.2%, or $3 million over the previous year's quarter. We look at the, again, profit very low for the company. Earnings per share came in at just 1 penny per share, or $1 million on an overall basis. They were careful to point out that this was reduced by $7 million of a pre-tax store impairment charge and $2 million in pre-tax fees and expenses to their strategic alternatives review. It's a bit unclear as to what that was, but overall, this compares unfavorably to the 8 cents per share for the same quarter last year that they reported. Missed consensus estimates of 7 cents per share, so a very big miss when you're looking at analyst expectations. Also, this is their lowest earnings per share mark in well over a year. Their CEO, Craig A. Leavitt, blamed a challenging retail environment and later Easter holiday. And overall, it looks as though these low numbers are relaying a larger image of the company that is struggling and potentially one that could be looking to sell to another larger publicly traded firm such as Coach or potentially Michael Kors that has actually been running out the news outlets lately. So I am curious to see what happens here, Trent, but a lot of changes within the company and not a clear path to success.
Other than e-commerce growth, there wasn't a whole lot positive from this earnings release. And again, no exact numbers on e-commerce growth. They didn't break out a lot into categories because of this review of strategic alternatives, and that's why there was no earnings call. So all we have to go off of is basically a 2 to 3 sheet paper news release that was sent out to various outlets and posted on their investor relations page. Overall, double-digit e-commerce growth for the company, but what struck out to me more than anything were the comps in brick and mortar. When you exclude e-commerce, their comps were down 8.1% over the previous year's first quarter. And you go back to that quote that Leighton listed off regarding Craig Leavitt's blaming of a challenging retail environment. I can tell you there aren't a whole lot of retailers, even those in this high-end luxury fashion retail space, that are seeing same-store sales declines in brick and mortar of 8.1%. That's like Sears area dropping. They currently have 109 specialty stores and 68 outlet stores in North America, average square footage of about 2,500 feet per location, 94 international stores. They also have 29 licensee-operated stores, and that's why I find their same-store sales drop in brick-and-mortar so concerning. Leighton and I have talked at length repeatedly on the podcast about certain businesses having success in the off-price sector. Again, in this circumstance, Kate Spade, 68 outlet stores in the country. Comparing them to several other businesses, their outlet stores are vastly underperforming the outlet stores of many other luxury fashion retail chains. Besides e-commerce, another slight positive is that their gross profit, so basically revenue minus cost of goods sold, was up, although selling, general, and administrative expenses was also up $13 million over the prior year's first quarter, so they are basically spending more money from the product to the time it gets into consumers' hands. So a number of concerns for the company, but Leighton, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see a whole lot from the company over the next few months, because in their comments on their review of strategic alternatives, they mention, and I quote from the press release, the company does not intend to disclose developments or provide updates on the progress or status of this process. And they basically said the same thing in February when they first announced the review process going on. They said, and once again, I quote, there can be no assurance that this review process will result in a transaction or other strategic alternative of any kind, end quote. Of course, they are spending about $2 million, at least in the first quarter they did, on this strategic review process, but at the same time, limiting the amount of information that gets out to the general public. It's going to be difficult to kind of diagnose some of the problems other than the generalized brick-and-mortar melees that Kate Spade is experiencing.
Absolutely. And when you look at prospective buyers of this company, this is going to be one of the first things they look at, is to see their strategic change going forward. But if they're not going to be transparent about some processes they have in place to try to build out these sales, I am curious to see if it's going to be attractive for any buyers. But if you look at their market cap, again, publicly traded company in Kate Spade, ticker KATE, you see a market cap of just $2.23 billion. And you're seeing that the stock price just in the last 5 days had dropped over 10.5%. So potentially you could see this company as one that is failing or one that has a potentially good valuation if you're looking at their place in the market as a competitive one. But you look at a company as in Michael Kors, who is approximately 3 times larger in terms of market cap, their stock is down significantly as well for the last 6 months or so. So you're looking at two companies there that are failing, at least from the stock price perspective. And then lastly, if you bring in Coach, which is almost twice as big as Michael Kors, you're looking at a company that has had its problems too. So you're looking at a sector that is a very interesting one, one that is hyper competitive, but a lot of consumers now, as I just saw from a report through a Neiman Marcus press release, that consumers, even the higher price consumers, those consumers in better demographics, they too are beginning to be price conscious. And so I think that is going to affect the bottom lines of these companies in the long term. Well, we move on to our last story, and one that I am particularly excited about. This is a company that we had talked about 2 quarters ago. Skechers turning a solid profit this Thursday with solid international retail and wholesale operations. That was really the bottom line of the story here, with their international growth being very large. It was between Skechers and Sherwin-Williams for this portion of the podcast, as they had both reported at the same exact time. Again, 2 quarters ago, we reported on both Skechers and Sherwin-Williams. And since then, it's interesting, if you look at Sherwin-Williams stock, they've actually reached all-time highs, that they've really been performing at the highest of levels. Skechers, however, brought in record-setting revenue for the quarter with $1.07 billion. This is their first quarter of $1 billion or more in revenue. The company was ecstatic about this, and this was something that the media was keen to highlight, a 9.6% increase in top-line revenue for the company year over year. Analysts were expecting a little bit less, $1.06 billion, but analysts were expecting a record-setting number at least. Earnings per share came in at 60 cents per share, which actually, again, topped analyst expectations. but this was just shy of the 63 cents they were pulling in for the same period last year. Shares of the company had carried a positive trend line through the week in anticipation of solid earnings. There was some positive consumer sentiment and investor sentiment out there. One report said there was likely going to be a positive earnings release due to increased online traffic. If you look at some analytical firms out there, they were saying that traffic to their e-commerce businesses was much improved over the last several months and was going to indicate a strong first quarter. Historically, first and second quarter earnings are the strongest quarters for this company. If you look at their recent past, or at least their last 2 years, the theme of this earnings release, again, though, international growth, international wholesale division, and this included joint ventures and franchise locations overseas. These numbers increased 16.8%, and they reported a 12.8% increase in the company-owned retail locations globally. Same-store sales globally increased 2.9%. This number was going to be a little bit higher overall. However, it was dragged down by domestic sales from their retail footprint. They have 1.5% positive comps here domestically for the first quarter, but 8.2% internationally. So again, the international growth and their international retail presence has just been growing and exceeding their own company expectations to date.
It was indeed an excellent quarter for Skechers. They have a significant amount of momentum now over the last 6 months, and their focus has primarily been on international sales, as it makes up over half of their overall revenue, and the domestic wholesale business was flat to slightly positive. The funny thing is, analysts on this call didn't like this one bit, and there are a lot of questions lobbed up about this to David Weinberg, their COO and CFO, who honestly handled the questions very well. Knows the company inside and out. He was the only executive on this call. But the fact that their domestic wholesale business was flat to slightly positive to me is a good thing. We're looking at a domestic shoe market in the United States that is struggling somewhat. Just a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing the bankruptcy of Payless Shoe Source and the idea that they were closing multiple stores. And you're seeing that across the board. Really only Shoe Sensation, a chain that we talked about, was seeing a lot of success, at least in the private portion of shoe retailers. So the fact that they're actually slightly positive tells me that they're recapturing some of the market share that they began to lose to some of the athletic shoe companies in the last 5 years or so. So that's a good thing for the company. I don't think you could spy domestic wholesale sales being up more than mid-single digits. The fact that they were above flat is a strong thing for Skechers. The company also has a healthier balance sheet than this time last year, recording now $607.8 million in cash and cash equivalents. Let's talk a little bit about their margins. Gross margins came in at $476.5 million, or 44.4% of revenue versus 44.2% last year. David Weinberg said they could have been higher if it weren't for a hit on currency valuation. Analysts also cited a company miss here, but it seemed as though currency was the main culprit. And when you have a business that gets over half of their sales from international sources, currency will wreak havoc on this number from time to time. Management did go on to say that they were hopeful that better margins would come as a function of higher top line sales in the second half of the year as they increase the number of store locations, the number of international wholesale business deals that they've got, and they can enjoy economy of scale from those two sources. Selling expenses did also increase as a percentage of sales. Management said that regional advertising in new international markets, which of course is something required in this case, was the primary driver of this percentage increase. And there are things that analysts seem to get hung up on. Selling expenses, one of those. Inventory levels, another one, Leighton, where I think you and I both look at these as necessary costs for a company that continues to grow abroad.
They were questioned on the Q&A during the conference call about the inventory levels as it pertains to each region internationally. However, management was able to answer these questions in a very thoughtful manner. They were saying that actually each region is on their own growth track, and so they won't be able to really tell you what the inventory is looking like quarter over quarter in each particular area. But we see that domestically, again, this was another issue that analysts and other investors were getting hung up on. We were seeing that sales here domestically are not that great. However, they were still posting positive same-store sales. We had mentioned that over 1% same-store sales increases in the domestic retail store footprint. So I think overall, the company is performing very well. And you look at how they're growing internationally, at the very least, you can say that the contribution margin from outside of the U.S. sales are contributing to a very strong business overall, and that will at least get them through tough times. But one thing, one overarching theme that I had noticed from this call was the fact that the second half of the year is going to be very strong for Skechers, or at least that's how they're looking at it. And they're citing several bankruptcies and other happenings in the market that's actually going to be helping them. People talk about a retail apocalypse. They're looking at the complete opposite. They said they're looking after the second quarter to see consolidation in the overall market. And when these liquidation sales end, they're going to be having a stronger footprint inside the United States. And that just makes sense because you have a ton of retailers out there that are closing their doors and ending and ceasing operations. You're going to see a lot of merchandise, particularly in shoes, that are going to be a little off price, a little cheap for the short term. However, once that phase passes, they will be able to reap the fruits of that. And I think this is going to be one example here. We talk about in Payless, where they're closing shops. And the CFO had mentioned that this is definitely going to be an area that they're going to look for in terms of the price point that they're going to be leaving open in the market. We look at a store like Payless where they have shoes that are in the lower to mid price points, and this is the area that Skechers really wants to exploit. They said that their strongest areas in overall sales have come from these lower price shoes and even shoes like sandals and things of that nature that aren't really looked at as higher end items. And I think that is going to be the primary area that Payless is going to leave open. So I am curious if they are going to be capitalizing on these sales in the latter half of the year. There was one analyst that asked their CFO, David Weinberg, if they were looking at Q3 and Q4 as predominantly positive quarters for the domestic markets. And he said if he had to guess, he would say yes. And so I think overall, you're seeing a company that is very intact here. We're seeing that they have more cash on hand. We're seeing that even though selling expenses are higher, 6.9% of sales versus 5.5% of sales, they are doing perfect marketing campaigns overseas. And these are required. We're talking about markets that they may only have 2, 3, 4 locations in. Intensive marketing campaigns are necessary in order to build up your brand and create that awareness in those particular regions. And they also talked about opening a concept store inside the United States, trying to build that brand up here. So even though it may cost a little bit more upfront to have these concept stores, they really want to bolster their brand. And for a company that really hasn't been publicly traded for that long, they have been a market beater. And so I am curious to see what the market has to say when Q2 hits and potentially a strong back-to-school season, as they are alluding to. To cap this story off, we see that they do have a very large retail presence internationally and even domestically. They ended the quarter with 584 total company-owned locations, 422 of which exist in the United States. I mentioned a concept store that's opening in Century City, California, and 1,471 international Skechers that were owned by either third parties or were joint ventures with the company. The company is open to trying a lot of different things. So we're talking about licensing, franchising, and joint partnerships, all part of their business plan. They added 65 of those during the quarter, 35 of which were from China, which is their fastest and biggest growing international market. Online sales grew 23.5%, and the e-commerce business as a whole has looked very strong, really leading you to believe that those numbers or those projections from the analytics companies were correct and saying that traffic numbers were up. Shares of the company were up 2.33% in after-hours trading. However, down slightly as markets opened on Friday morning. Shares are down 23% for the year, trading around $27 a share currently, actually around $25, $26 a share as of Friday. But overall, we see a company with a price-to-earnings ratio of around 16 and a $4.35 billion market cap. So still a very large player in this space and a lot of room to grow, especially in the international space.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
Well, we head on to the final segment here on the Retail Focus podcast, where Leighton and I each look ahead to one story that we'll be keeping an eye on in terms of development over the next week, month, or year. And I'll begin news coming out of the state of Kansas this week that Governor Sam Brownback has signed a new law allowing the sale of stronger beer in grocery and convenience stores in 2019. Now, Kansas becomes the most recent state to allow beer stronger than 3.2% by weight to be sold in grocery and convenience stores. Neighboring Colorado and Oklahoma have also relaxed laws of late, and that provided some pressure, certainly on Kansas, to do the same. Now you just have a couple of states remaining in the U.S. that sells 3.2 beer. Now you might ask why I'm bringing this up on Retail Focus instead of our partner Food Focus podcast. Well, for one, I want to see how this is going to impact certain retailers going forward. The legislation is a little different than what other states have put into place. For example, the legislation allows only 6% alcohol by volume beer or less to be sold in grocery stores. So your stronger IPAs, your doubles, your triples, that type of thing won't be able to be sold in grocery stores, nor will wine. It pretty much just expands the ability of the grocery and convenience stores to sell beer. In the past, Costco and Aldi have both kind of implied that their investment in markets without the ability to sell liquor, and we can throw Trader Joe's into this mix as well, is perhaps a little bit less because of the restrictions on the table there. So we'll see now if you get larger investment in the state of Kansas from companies like Costco and Aldi, Trader Joe's. Also, this may impact Kroger and Quick Trip, a store that we talk about often when we do discuss the C-store industry. Quick Trip will be able to sell stronger beer, and Kroger's affiliate in the state, Dillon's, may see also a pop in revenue as these liquor laws get relaxed. In addition to the fact that wine still won't be in grocery stores, there is a little bit of an addition to this law, which is that there will be an assessment for the legislature in Kansas in 2029, so 12 years from now, on the market impact of the change, and it's possible that no further change will be made until that report in 12 years. So those wanting to buy wine at stores like Dillon's and Quick Trip may have to wait until that point, and Kansas may have to wait just that long to see future investment from the likes of Costco and Trader Joe's, who pick up a large share of their sales at any one location, same thing with Aldi, from the sales of wine and strong beer.
That is a very interesting story, Trent. I'm curious to see how that pans out for the state of Kansas. My story has to do with another closing of a popular retailer here in the United States. However, not a bankruptcy, or at least not a bankruptcy just yet. News broke this week of retailer Beebe closing all of their brick-and-mortar stores inside the United States and Canada. They have 168 stores in those two countries. Overall, they had planned on some strategic alternatives, or said they were exploring some strategic alternatives with the SEC earlier this month, and they had said they had proposed a plan to close around 28 stores. Now it appears much larger. However, again, it appears uncertain as to whether the company is going to be closing their online business as well and filing bankruptcy, but they are going to be looking through and trying to get some liquidity out of this, at least in the short term. This is interesting to me because this mall staple had a pretty good run of things. They are a publicly traded company, and this comes at a time where there's a lot of negative press about mall retail. So for us here at the Retail Focus, this isn't the best news. However, this is hopefully going to be a retailer that is able to stick around, at least in the online side of things. But I am curious to see in the next couple of weeks if there is a Chapter 11 bankruptcy announcement coming by way of the SEC. This is, again, another sad story of a brick and mortar retailer closing locations in the United States and Canada.
That'll do it for this edition of the Retail Focus podcast. For Leighton, I'm Trent. Make sure and check us out next week on the Food Focus podcast, where we'll talk at a little more length about the new liquor and beer laws in the state of Kansas and how that might impact the overarching beer and alcohol industry, as less demand for 3.2 beer will exist at that point. As always, check us out on Twitter at Retail Podcast. And also, if you like us on iTunes or any other podcast listening service, make sure and leave us some feedback or a comment. We always love those as well. Once again, we'll be back this time next week with more retail news.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.